Blog Talk Radio.
Now, this is the amazing question. If you could read my thoughts, you'd know you're listening to Mr. Media Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 600 archived celebrity interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by thepartyauthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. Now, Mr. Magoo, I'm not Mr. Magoo, I'm Mr. Media, damn it. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of baseball aficionados in the new media capital of the world and home of the 2010 American League East champion Tampa Bay Rays, St. Petersburg, Florida. Well, Lou Paper had to be wondering if it was a good thing or a bad thing for him when, a few weeks ago, Philadelphia Phillies pitcher Roy Halladay threw the first no-hitter in postseason competition against the hapless Cincinnati Reds in, a long time. After all, the paper had just launched his new book, Perfect, Don Larson's Miraculous World Series Game and the Men Who Made It Happen, and Halladay's achievement could potentially take away from or add to the luster of what the little-known Yankees pitcher accomplished back in 1957 against the Brooklyn Dodgers. Now, for my money, I think Halladay, who has been a consistently awesome pitcher throughout most of his career, only served to remind us what a gem a no-hitter is and how rare getting one is in the postseason. Now, barrels of ink have been spilled writing about Larson's perfect World Series game, but I never read any of those books. The thing that sucked me into this one wasn't even Paper's inning-by-inning account of the game. It was the story he wove about all the players who had had an impact on that day, October 8, 1957. Now, I've been a New York Mets fan since I knew the first thing about baseball in the 1960s, and an admirer of that team's former manager, Gil Hodges, forever. But I was still excited to read Paper's description of Hodges' early years, his married life, and much more. Same with Jackie Robinson, Pee Wee Reese, Yogi Berra, and many, many more. Now, this is a book about the men who played the game that day, even more to me than it is about Don Larson and the game itself. It's a terrific, irresistible read for anyone who calls him or herself a fan of America's pastime. Lou Paper, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thanks very much for having me. By the way, I should mention that the game was October
8, 1956. Did I get the year wrong? Oh, that was stupid.
Yeah, I think you mentioned 57, but just one of those slips and easy enough to happen. Hey, it's more than 50 years ago. It's easy to forget the precise year.
Well, Lou, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to blame it on my sick kid. I told you I had a sick kid today, and
right.
I didn't get to double-check my facts. So we'll just blame it on her. She's not here.
There you go.
So what did you think about Halladay's no-hitter?
Well, as you mentioned, it's a remarkable achievement because if you think about it, that since 1956 – there have been hundreds of postseason games played. Of course, prior to 1969, they only had the World Series. In 1969, they expanded it to include the League Championship Series, and then in, I think, 1994, they had the Division Playoff Series. So you've had, since 1956, some of baseball's best pitchers have had opportunities to pitch a no-hit game, and no one has done it. So for Halladay to do it, it's a remarkable achievement. It's not an easy thing to do.
Did you find the timing, at the very least, entertaining that you had this book come out right about the same time?
It was great timing. In fact, I was thinking about sending some flowers to Halladay to thank him. because it is a remarkable achievement, and it did help draw attention to the Larson book, which is just coming out. But I should say that as remarkable as Halladay's achievement is, I think it only underscores how much more remarkable was Larson's achievement, because Halladay pitched his – first of all, it was not a perfect game. He did walk one batter. And he pitched it in the first game of the division playoff. So although there is certainly pressure then, it's nothing compared to the pressure that occurs when you're in the World Series and you're playing for the final chips. And more than that, you have to remember that Don Larsen pitched his perfect game. It was the fifth game of the 1956 World Series. You had the New York Yankees and the Brooklyn Dodgers. So you had two teams, an arch rivalry that has no comparison today. And so Larsen had to deal with the pressure of pitching against the Yankees arch rival. And more than that, each team had won two games. So this was a pivotal fifth game. Whoever won was going to be ahead in the series 3-2. So it was that much more important for Larsen to succeed than Holiday, because Larsen knew that win or lose, it would have a big impact on where the Yankees stood in terms of trying to win the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, though, the Holiday no-hitter, it certainly took all the wind out of the sails of the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, they never recovered from starting a series that way.
Well, of course, it's, I guess, momentum, and it was certainly a great way to start. And like I say, although I think Larsen's achievement was that much more special, Halliday's performance was nothing short of incredible, and I'm sure it did give the Phillies a boost of confidence.
You know, in the book, you talk about how Larsen was never really a great pitcher, that this was really his shining moment, but that wasn't the case with Halliday. I mean, Halliday, you know.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, Halliday has been a good performer for many, many years. But like I said, there's many other great pitchers who have pitched in a World Series. Bob Gibson, Whitey Ford, just to name two off the top of my Sandy Koufax. So there's lots of great pitchers who have pitched in World Series and never duplicated Larsen's feat. And so he had that magic touch that day. But he was also assisted, of course, in the field. The Yankee fielders made some great plays, which helped him out.
Well, and you also write that it wasn't just the Yankees fielders who helped him. He had an umpire behind the plate who had kind of made it his mission to help him out.
Well, that's true. The last pitch to Dale Mitchell, who was the last Dodger hitter. He was pinch hitting for Sal Magley. Dale Mitchell had been in the American League for 11 years and was a great contact hitter, almost never struck out. And he was called out on strikes on a pitch that Mitchell complained was clearly out of the strike zone. And although Larsen and Barrett disagreed, every Yankee who was on the field who could see the pitch, those on the left side, because Mitchell was a left-handed batter, I'm talking about Mickey Mantle, the center fielder, Enos Slaughter, the left fielder, Gil Hodges at short, and Andy Carey at third. All of those Yankee fielders said that the last pitch to Mitchell was clearly outside the strike zone. And years later, Duke Snyder told me when I talked to him about the game that Babe Pennelly, the plate umpire, who was about to retire, he was officiating his last game behind the plate, told Snyder that when he realized he was could go out on a perfect game, he said anything close at that juncture was going to be a strike. So I guess from the Yankee fielder's perspective, Babe Pennelly did give Larsen a little help there.
Do you think does it take away from the game hearing this? And how long has that information been public?
Well, when I wrote the book, I mean, Snyder told it to me. I had not seen it anywhere else.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't think Duke, I guess nobody, as far as I know, no Duke had never told that to anyone else. And as far as I know, that's one of the many new details about the game and about the players that's in the book. But I would say this. I think it's important to keep in mind what Pennelly actually said. He didn't say, if a pitch is outside the strike zone, I'm going to call it a strike nonetheless. He was saying that anything close, anything where there was some doubt as to whether it was or was not in the strike zone, he was just saying if it was close, he was going to call it a strike. So, and I don't think, and I think it was only at the very end when he said that. And so I don't think Pennelly was a very respected plate umpire for the National League for 22 years. And on the one hand, I do think he might have given Larsen a little help there, but I don't think it detracts from Larsen's performance, because I think Pennelly was calling them otherwise as he saw them, and as I say, he was an experienced and very respected umpire.
What did you think? You know, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about the near perfect game earlier this season where an umpire blew the call on the last pitch. What did you think about that? That was the Detroit Tigers, and I apologize, I can't. Rodriguez? What was the guy's name?
Galarraga. What's his name?
Galarraga, right.
Right. For Detroit.
You know, in that situation, it really should have been a perfect game. Probably more perfect than Larson's based on that last pitch. But what did you think about that? You developed some expertise in this.
I think that it was, in a funny way, I think it was great for him, and I think it was great for baseball because it showed sportsmanship at its best. Here was a pitcher who did pitch a perfect game and actually got not only 27 guys out, but wound up getting 28 guys out. And he took it in stride. And this happens in baseball. It happens in life. Sometimes the plays are, you know, the calls are not perfect, and umpires, like all of us, make mistakes. And I think the way the umpire and Galarraga handled it, I thought showed, as I say, sportsmanship at its best. And in a way, he probably became more famous from that bad call than if he had pitched a perfect game. Because just like you're asking me now, there were other perfect games pitched last year, or no-hit games pitched last year. And everybody remembers that one for the reasons you mentioned. So maybe, as I say, he will be more renowned now than he would have been even if he had pitched a no-hit game or been credited with a no-hit game.
It's interesting to me that obviously, you know, we didn't have 18 TV angles on a World Series game back in 1956 the way we do now, that we did during Galarraga's game. So, you know, we can look back on the 56 game and say, well, if we had all those TV angles, it'd be quite clear that Pennelly gave away that pitch, you know, gave him that pitch and closed it out. But on the other hand, here we have all the TV angles in Galarraga's game. We know it was a perfect game. We know he
right.
got that guy out. It didn't really matter in the end.
Right. And again, it doesn't matter how many TV angles you have, and there's anything in sports or anything in human affairs, there are very few things that are really perfect. No system is going to be perfect where you have people making judgments. And if you have umpires looking at the baselines and whatever, calling balls and strikes, it's impossible to be perfect. And you just bear in mind, if you're talking about a home plate umpire, baseball is coming, being thrown at 90 to 100 miles an hour, and he doesn't have a box. It's just he's got to make a judgment without seeing the box you see that they have on the television screen. And so, you know, people can make mistakes. It's not that difficult. And same thing on the baseline. You know, they have literally less than a second to make a judgment and make that call. And so I think it's just inevitable, and I think it's just part of the game.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that much has already been written and celebrated about Larson's big game. So the question is, why write this book now? Let's see how my math is. 54 years later?
Right. Well, I had gone to – I'm a big baseball fan, and I had gone to a Yankees fantasy camp, and I had seen Larson there a couple of times I went. And, of course, when he's there, they always talk about the perfect game. And I love writing, and I was thinking about writing another book, and it just dawned on me. I kept thinking about Dale Mitchell. Everybody knows that Dale Mitchell made the last out in Larson's game, but very few people know anything about him, who he was, where he came from, and how he found himself to be in that position. And I thought it might be useful to tell not only the story about the game, but also to tell the stories of the 19 players who were there, some of whom were very famous, as you mentioned, Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, Duke Snider, Jackie Robinson, but many, like Dale Mitchell, who are not so famous or who are not well known. And, you know, to tell the stories of these players, who they were, where they came from, and most especially, what did they think about this unique event in baseball history. And it was a really wonderful experience for me writing it, and And as I say, I was able to uncover some new details about the game and the players' thinking that had not been disclosed before.
Mm. Yeah, there was. I'm just thumbing through the index in the back. Dale Mitchell was a great example of someone that and maybe I knew more about him when I was younger, and I've just forgotten over years. But yeah, I did not know much about him, and it was a really interesting story. He had had some issues, if I'm remembering correctly, in Cleveland before
Correct.
Coming to
right.
New York.
Right.
And
right.
where Lou Boudreau?
Lou Boudreau was his first manager, and then there was Al Lopez. But the person he had the most problem with was Hank Greenberg, who was the
Greenberg.
Cleveland Indian
okay.
general manager. Because here was Dale Mitchell, who was a good contact hitter, had a .312 lifetime batting average. Almost never struck out. He could go through an entire season playing 154 games and strike out less than 10 times in an entire season. I mean, today you get players mm-hmm. who will strike out that much in the course of a weekend or a week. And which, of course, is why but in any event, let me go back to Mitchell. But he was a contact hitter and a line drive hitter. And Hank Greenberg, who was a big home run hitter for Detroit and then Pittsburgh, thought that Mitchell, who was a big guy, 6'1", almost 200 pounds, which was big in those days, should be hitting more home runs. And he put a lot of pressure on Mitchell to hit more home runs, but Mitchell did not deliver as much as Greenberg wanted. And so basically at the end of the day, Greenberg started benching him. And that's how the Dodgers were able to buy Mitchell's contract for $1,000 in 1956 because Cleveland no longer wanted him.
It's amazing because today, of course, you'd get a guy like the Rays manager, Joe Maddon, who would take a reliable singles hitter over a home run hitter probably any time because he feels like he can do more with guys on base than a guy who's going to strike out three or four times.
Right. Well, of course, that's true. But I guess that Greenberg's perspective was being a big home run hitter himself, I'm sure he thought very highly of people who hit home runs like he did.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, look, let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you are listening to the Mr. Media interview with baseball historian Lou Paper, author of Perfect, Don Larson's Miraculous World Series Game and the Men Who Made It Happen, and that was in 1956. And we will be right back.
Ever thought of hosting your own radio show? Now you can by registering at blogtalkradio.com. While you're there, check out our selection of premium packages. To start your own show today, visit blogtalkradio.com.
This is a public disservice message from the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Don't waste your evenings doing volunteer work at your local mental hospital. Remember, even if you do, the crazy people there will probably think you didn't.
I don't know, it gets me every time. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to the Mr. Media radio interview with baseball historian Lou Paper, author of Perfect, Don Larson's Miraculous World Series Game, and the Men Who Made It Happen. Now, before I bring Lou back, here is a special offer for Mr. Media radio listeners who are on Twitter. For the first 10 people who retweet a link to this Mr. Media interview, and you either know what that means or you don't, basically you're going to tell people to come back and listen to this interview with Lou, you will qualify, the first 10 will qualify to receive a free paperback copy of The Yogi Book by the inimitable Yogi Berra. Berra, of course, was Don Larson's catcher during his perfect game in 1956. Email your link, your retweet of a link to bob@mrmedia.com, that's mrmedia.com, and if you're a winner, I'll write back for your physical mailing address. Only the first 10 retweeters can win, and my decision will be final. Ties, of course, go to the runner. All right, let's bring Lou Pape back on. Lou, the World Series literally starts tonight, pitting the Texas Rangers against the San Francisco Giants, or as I like to think of it, the almost Tampa Bay Rangers versus the almost Tampa Bay Giants. You have any thoughts on the series?
I think it's going to be a great series. I am a Yankee fan, so I was disappointed to see that the Yankees didn't make it, but I have to say the Rangers outplayed them, outhit them. And I think it's great. Here you have the Texas Rangers who have never been in a World Series before, And the Giants, it's been a long time since they've been in a series, and an even longer time since they won the World Series. And so, and both teams, I think, will have a lot of enthusiasm. And so, and they have a lot of good players. And so I think it'll be an exciting World Series.
Yeah, it was interesting that the Rangers dominated the Rays, mostly on Cliff Lee, but they really just completely dominated the Yankees. It wasn't just Lee.
Exactly. And I think the Yankees talk as just apropos of our book about Larson, the problem with the Yankees this year, I think, was that they did not have really the kind of pitching that they needed, and so they hurt them. And I think also they were not hitting as well. Of course, the Rangers had some good pitchers, but I think the principal problem I think that the Yankees faced was a lack of pitching, which was a real contrast with when Larson pitched his perfect game, which is why it's so amazing, because Larson was hardly one of the stalwarts of the Yankee staff, and I think he himself was surprised that he was selected to pitch a fifth game, because he had started the second game and not done well. And he knew, as did the Yankee players, that there were so many other pitchers on the Yankee staff who were better than he was and who he expected would get the nod for that fifth game.
Yeah, it's weird how you go to a game like that, you go to a series, and you expect your aces to be the one to step up. Everybody expected Sabathia and Hughes, in this recent series, but back then, it's like, okay, we got to get through a game with Larson. Well, hey, you hope that a guy like that will step up, but you just never know what's going to happen.
Well, I can say that I talked to a lot of the players, the Yankee players at the time, the surviving, who were on the team then, and mm-hmm. each one of the Yankee players with whom I talked was flabbergasted and shocked when they found out that Larson was going to be pitching that fifth game. And Larson himself was surprised. He walked into the locker room that morning, late that morning, and he thought he would be sitting on the bench or sitting out in the bullpen. And the Yankees had a tradition of where the third base coach, Frank Corsetti, would put a ball in the shoe, which the shoes are polished outside the players' lockers. He would put a ball in the shoe of the pitcher who was going to be pitching that day. And Larson sauntered into the clubhouse thinking that he was not going to be doing anything. And he came in, and there was the ball in his shoe. And I talked to Bob Turley, whose locker adjoined Larson's, and he was sitting there when Larson came in. And he said when Larson came in, he just stared at that ball for the longest time and just gulped. I should mention, by the way, for whatever it's worth, that your listeners who are interested, they can see the photos from the game and about the players and learn more about it. They can go to my website, which is Lou Paper, LEWPAPER, loupaper.com. And there's a lot of photos, from the game and of the players.
And contrast, if you would, how different that experience is from today. I mean, so he came in. He didn't know when he came in that day that he'd be pitching. Today, these guys know days ahead. Sometimes the team will fly them to, if they're traveling, they'll fly them to fly the pitcher to the city a day ahead, so he has time to, get his head around things, get acclimated. That's very different.
Absolutely. I mean, I take it going back to Halliday's performance. Halliday knew all along that he was going to be pitching the first game of that series, and like you say, both physically and mentally, he could get himself prepared and geared up for that task. And here's Larson, who just was out the night before, goes drinking and just enjoying himself, figuring, he's got nothing to do, and boom, there he is. He's placed in a pressure situation where his team and the manager are counting on him to pull them through this pivotal fifth game. So that makes his accomplishment all the more remarkable.
Mm. Well, let me end with this question. Was Larson's was his life better or worse in subsequent years for his achievement on that October day in 1956?
Well, I think even Don would say that it was much better, because it gave him a notoriety that he never would have had but for his performance I mean, you and I would not be talking. People would say, Don who? And say, I think I vaguely remember him. Now he's an icon in baseball history, and everybody knows him, any baseball fan, that is. And he's in great demand as a speaker and for going to card shows and memorabilia events. So, and it gives him a tremendous amount of satisfaction to know that he did something which, with the possible exception of Halliday, nobody else has done, and even baseball's most illustrious pitchers. And so that's a real feather in his cap, and I think it gives him a lot of pleasure and satisfaction.
Well, folks, listen, you can find baseball historian Lou Paper's new book, Perfect, Don Larsen's Miraculous World Series Game and the Men Who Made It Happen, at great bookstores everywhere, or order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. And Lou, you gave us your website. It's Lou Paper, LewPaper.com.
Right.
Folks want to go and check that out. Are you on Facebook, Twitter, things like that?
No. Well, I do have a Facebook account, but I think the best thing is LouPaper.com, and that's a provision. There's a way there to contact me and on that website. And so that's the best place to go.
Great. Well, thank you so much for – sorry about the knocking at the door. Thank you
that's
so much
okay.
for joining us today. And hope you'll come back and join us real soon.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And for more original interviews with your favorite sports writers and barking dogs, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. Go to audiblepodcast.com/MRMedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/MRMedia for your free audiobook. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest or a comment on today's show, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, twitter.com/Andelman, or on Facebook, just search Mr. Media Interviews. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a piece of your day and spending it with us. Thanks for listening.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media show right on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher's smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free app at www.stitcher.com. That's STITCHER.com.